Good evening, everyone. I'd like to call to order our meeting this afternoon on June the 7th, 2023. Let's stand, pledge allegiance, and a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Okay. May I have a motion to adopt the agenda?
Madam Chairman, I just bring up, I'm thinking Fred, maybe you want to assist with this. I know Mr. O'Brien, I haven't seen him on here. He had requested to participate in the meeting for remote participation. So Fred, you want to?
Yeah, Mr. O'Brien sent an email, and I think each of you got it.
Yes.
And in my opinion, his reason for not being able to participate in person is entirely within the terms of statute, and it's entirely appropriate. I think particularly because he thinks he may have an infectious respiratory disorder. Mr. Dahl is in agreement with it, and I understand Mrs. Booker agrees with it as well. The board needs to ratify that so that he can participate remotely. So I would suggest you go ahead and do that.
Okay, so we need a motion to ratify that Mr. O'Brien will be joining us, hopefully, remotely for this meeting.
I'd like to make that motion, that he be able to attend.
Okay, second, please.
Second.
All right. It has been motioned by Mr. Eager and second by Mr. Fairchild. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye, and one opposed. Chair votes aye as well. Okay, now that we've done that, let's do an adoption for the agenda. Anything added to the agenda?
I do not have anything, Madam Chair.
All right, may I have a motion to adopt the agenda?
Make a motion.
Second, please.
Second.
All right, it's a motion by Mr. Fairchild and second by Mrs. Eager that we adopt the agenda, and the chair votes aye. And we have Mr. Sheridan, who is delayed, and hopefully Mr. O'Brien will be here remotely. All right, now we have our county administrator's report. Mr. Dahl?
Yep, Madam Chair, members of the board, just have a few short things to report this evening. So I understand there's a birthday coming up for someone. He looks surprised by that.
What is the date? What's the date?
The 10th, Saturday.
Yeah.
Oh, June.
Well, I'm glad we reminded you.
Surprise.
Oh, that's right. I remember you saying that when Scott, when we were at church.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, we have a few new employees to welcome. So Brandon Krett, the Parks and Recreation, started as the Athletics and Special Events Coordinator for Parks and Recreation. He started on May 30th. Daniel Witten, who actually is starting for the County Attorney Department, the county's first in-house County Attorney Department. He started just past Monday, June 5th. And Mr. Witten's at the end of the table there. I'd like to welcome him to Fluvanna County. And also previously, through some of these slides, we had announced the new EMS supervisor, Jim True. So Jim, if you could stand up just so the board can see. So Jim is kind of undertaking, kind of creating the new EMS department and kind of getting a lot of those things in place to get the county's first paid county crew for EMS department to set up. So let's welcome them aboard. And I think Mr. O'Brien's joining us for the meeting. Let's see here. So for some announcement on May 24th, Governor Youngkin commemorated Foster Care Awareness Month by signing two foster care bills. Fluvanna County foster and adoptive parents Donnie and Dee Ward, who provided a safe and stable and nurturing home for many children through Fluvanna Social Services. They attended the ceremony. I want to thank Ms. Kim Abe for providing this information and kind of bringing awareness to this as well. And then just, you know, some upcoming meetings we have. So again, we're going to be in here for the next two meetings. So Wednesday, June 21st at 7 p.m., we will have a regular meeting in here. And then remember, in July, we only have one meeting. And so again, the meeting will be in here. It's July 5th. So we will have a 5 p.m. meeting and then again a 7 p.m. meeting. And, you know, usually about 6:30 to 7, we'll break for closed session and for some light sustenance for the board to stay moving. And then Wednesday, August 2nd at 5 p.m., we'll have a regular meeting and we'll be back at the Performing Arts Center. And I'd be happy to answer any questions the board members have.
Okay, any questions for Mr. Dahl?
Did I not email you the thing on the fishing? I meant to today. I know you were talking.
Well, I will tell you today, I've got a list of emails. Okay. I've got a long list of emails to go through. So I apologize if you did email me something.
But I might not. With this, since it's your report, is this a time when I could say that about this fishing fundraiser? It's not even a fundraiser. I was just going to. I wanted to make an announcement of it's because I told them I would. The Lake Monticello. Well, so there's going to be a kids fishing day at Lake Monticello, June 17th, ages 3 to 12, followed by pizza and prizes. And if people don't have fishing gear, bait, and so on, they're ready to supply all that. They do need to have an adult
and
with them.
Inside
that is inside
so
the lake, and it's open.
How do you get your
in? It's open to anybody. Okay. My understanding is it says they're going to go in for that.
Okay.
And it's at no charge.
And it's at the main lake or Tufton Pond. Do we know that? I'm assuming it's the main lake, but I just wanted to.
Good question, and it doesn't say.
Okay.
Okay.
It is?
It's Tufton, okay.
Okay.
Yeah, so I guess anyone would probably need to go to the main gate, anyone that is not a Lake Monticello resident, and then I'm assuming the gate can give them directions to Tufton Pond.
Okay.
Yep. Okay.
Okay, and I would just like to add that we did attend the graduation, May 26th, I think Louisiana had 275 graduates. So we're happy that's done. And I'd like to thank the staff for Saturday with our Develop Fork Union. Very well done. And I think people learned a lot, and still there are questions and concerns. But thank you all for all the hard work that you did to present that.
You're welcome.
Okay. And now I'm going to open the first public comments section. If you'd like to speak to the board, you can come. Is a mic there, or can it be heard? Do they need to come somewhere else?
No, but here's what we can do.
Okay. All right, there we go.
We will improvise.
Okay.
There we go.
Perfect. Thank you. You can come to the lecture and give your name, address, and you have 5 minutes. Thank you.
Yes. Good evening.
Good evening.
My name is James Schoenster. District, and I'm running for the Board of Supervisors. From today's agenda, I see that there are many possibilities being floated in relation to the future funding of JAUNT. I will let our county administrator explain these options in more detail when we get to that item, but to summarize, three ways we can do nothing and reduce this service by about 10%, spend $10,000 more this year on JAUNT to keep the current service level, or we can spend $22,000 and expand some of their services from 3 to 5 days a week. I've been an advocate for the seniors in this community before I decided to run for office, and my election campaign has allowed me to engage with even more folks from that demographic. JAUNT has come up several times without my prompting, and as a subject that is on the front of many of their minds. I'm pleased to hear that my concerns regarding our seniors were echoed by other members of the community, so I wish to advocate for them today. Please elect to fund the extra days and, for a modest sum, help to make this local region more accessible to some of our most vulnerable residents. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else would like to speak to the board? Yes.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name is Isella Wittick. I live at the lake. I am not contagious. I cannot get rid of asthma and allergies.
I'm a fan.
Here I am. With tears streaming down my face, I watched a jaunt bus pull out of my driveway, carrying my beloved husband, suffering from memory decline, to Java in Charlottesville. His first trip on a jaunt bus. My brain flashed back to my first child, our first child, climbing aboard a school bus for her first day of kindergarten. After numerous assurances I'd be here to greet him when Jot returned him home, he climbed aboard the jaunt bus as the driver stood by, ready to help him in any way. A deep blessing and thank you to jaunt drivers. They are special people. The building of our home was finished, and we moved to Lake Monticello in January of 1998. 25 years ago. We fell in love with Louvanna County. My husband became an active member of Habitat for Humanity, helping building homes and serving on the Habitat board for many years. As his memory declined, he was made an honorary board member. He volunteered in the science department of Louvanna High School and numerous weeks at Westview on the James. He was a servant to mankind. Now it was his time of special need. With his memory declining, he needed social stimulation beyond that at home. I turned to Jot for transportation Tuesday and Thursday morning to Java in Charlottesville, as I had enrolled him in Java's 4-hour morning session on those days, and Jot returning him back home early afternoon. Using Jot for his transportation relieved me of driving 8 trips into town each week. This allowed me time for running errands, buying groceries, doctor appointments, taking a nap maybe. Being a full-time caregiver left little time for anything else. How I loved seeing the jaunt bus come down our driveway on Tuesday and Thursday afternoon, as I knew my husband had been offered the opportunity to participate in numerous activities offered him by Java. He was happy to come home, and I loved welcoming him home. I had complete faith that John would keep him safe while driving him. Thank you, John, for making all this possible. When each of you made the decision to run for the supervisor of Savannah County, you put out flyers, posters along the county roads, gave interviews to news media. I dare say you promised your constituents, vote for me and I will represent you. Your needs, your interests, your concerns. Yes, sir, you can count on me. The acceptance of John's proposal of applying $11,000 of the Java rebate, $22,760, will show your constituents that you meant what you said, that you really do support their needs. Procedural issues, how monies are moved around, or personal agendas are not addressing constituent needs. Please sign your please let your constituents know you meant what you asked and what you said when you asked for their vote. Please discuss your concerns with Jaunt instead of heels dug in cement. Just because that's how it's always been done doesn't mean it can't change. Let's have a positive relationship with Jaunt. Please work out differences, concerns, compromise. Do good for Savannah County so the midday link is not dropped. Please don't keep Jaunt as a diamond in the rough. Dig that diamond out. Turn back the entire rebate for a 5-day service, including the present midday service. Please serve the people of Savannah County, those who rely on Jaunt for transportation to work, appointments, buying groceries. There are many people in need. Please do the right thing. Use the Jaunt rebate in support of Jaunt transportation, the origin of that resource. Please give it your positive support. Your lack of support will impact human lives. Thank you for your support. Please vote in acceptance of Jaunt's proposal so others may enjoy life as my husband did.
Thank you.
Do we have anyone else who would like to address the board? Yes.
My name is Peggy Shanklin. I live at 865 Jefferson Drive. Tough act to follow, I guess. Hello. Jaunt is really needed in our community. We live in rural Virginia. These people have to go to Charlottesville. They need stimulation. We have four senior centers in Flavanna at each corner, nothing at the lake. We need to increase our service to get them to Java and to the center of Belvedere, not decrease. Now, and I understand from what I've heard, certain procedures are not being followed or, you know, exceptions would have to be made. But I'm saying we need to make the exception because our seniors are an underserved portion of our community, and it's a growing portion. And in the state of Virginia, I'm a senior center. Senior citizen at 55. So we gotta get the stuff straight, so when I need it, it's there. But please vote for this and increase it and fully fund it. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to speak before?
Good evening. My name is Brian Bowler, 133 Oak Hill Lane, Palmyra, Virginia. I'm coming up to you today to speak to you about the item on the agenda regarding funding for Jaunt. And I would like to encourage the Board of Supervisors to maximize the amount of funding that they provide to Jaunt. Back in 2017, 2018, I was part of the Flavanna Leadership Development Program. And as part of the project that I had to do for that, we chose to take a closer look at the transportation needs for constituents here in Flavanna County. To address this, we talked to private citizens, we talked to multiple public agencies, including the Commonwealth Attorney's Office, the Department of Social Services, Region 10 Community Services Board, as well as the Virginia Department of Health. And what we found was very surprising was that practically every single public agency cited transportation or lack of public transportation as a big issue in the operation of their departments or their agencies. It becomes extraordinarily difficult for people to get the basic assistance they needed if they're unable to go to the social services office. If they are unable to get transportation to the food banks. Commonwealth attorneys struggle to actually successfully prosecute cases if their witnesses are unable to get to the courthouse. This is while we've heard a lot of people come up today to talk about seniors, I want to emphasize that it goes beyond just that population. It actually impacts our ability to provide good, adequate services to our constituents, regardless of their need. So that was approximately 5 years ago. Today in 2023, I can tell you that has not changed one bit. In my professional capacity, I help run the community policy and management team, which looks at frequently at the needs of services and support in our community. And one thing that's come up consistently for the past 6 years that I've been running that board is a need for transportation. This problem has not gone away. If anything, it's even gotten worse, especially with how limited things have become as a result of the pandemic from 2020 up until 2023. This is not a time for us to actually reduce this type of transportation service. If anything, this is an opportunity for us to expand upon it and actually provide our constituents the ability to be happy, healthy, and safe just by being able to get from simply point A to point B. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Do we have anyone else who would like to speak to the board? Okay, if not, I will close.
And just make sure we have no one online.
Sorry. I always forget the line. Anyone online? Mm-mm. Anyone online would like to speak? I don't see.
Nope. And maybe we should just confirm that that is Mr. O'Brien online. I would assume it was, but I just want to make sure from a record-keeping standpoint.
Yes, this is me online. Okay. Sorry, I should put my full name in.
All right. Okay. Thank you. Then I will close the first public comment. Okay. How did you, Mr. Sheridan?
Okay. Madam Chairman, would you help Mr. O'Brien identify his location?
Okay. Mr. Bryant, would you identify your location, please? Okay, he's ready. Mr. Bryant, would you please?
From the pharmacy back to my home right now.
Okay. from the pharmacy back to your home. All right, thank you.
Yes.
Okay. We don't have any, we don't have a public hearing, so we will go into action matters. A, Special Department County Attorney Temporary Hire, Eric Dahl, County Administrator.
Yeah, so a couple of the next two items, A and B, are really procedural.
Okay. All right.
So one, you know, as we all know, Mr. Payne, sitting to my right, has retired from private practice from his firm, Payne and Hodes, and that was effective May 1, 2023. Since that time, he agreed to assist the county to be hired as a temporary county attorney from May 1 until June 30th, until we were able to hire, you know, the full-time county attorney. And since that point, you know, we have hired Mr. Dan Witten in that position. So from a procedural standpoint, there's a couple items to ratify. One, since Mr. Witten started on June 5th, first and foremost, we need to make the transition and reclassification for Mr. Payne from county attorney to special deputy county attorney, and that would be effective June 5th from Monday, and again going through June 30th at the rate of pay that we had agreed to previously when we appointed him as the county attorney. And like I said, this position is needed due to the county hiring Mr. Witten. So that is number one. And again, you know, Mr. Payne will continue for the next couple meetings. Again, he is, although we're appointing Mr. Witten as the county attorney and Mr. Payne the special deputy county attorney, for this meeting, for the board, he'll be kind of the main legal advisor if questions come up, just so Mr. Witten has a chance to kind of see the way the board does it. And then also for next week at the Planning Commission meeting, Mr. Payne will be doing the same thing. Your meeting on June 21st, Mr. Witten then will be the county attorney, kind of providing the board legal advice at that point. So really, the motion on the screen is just a change from county attorney to special deputy county attorney for Mr. Payne.
Okay, so this motion covers A and B.
This motion just covers A and B, and I'll just bring the motion up for B right after. I think I kind of covered what the brief is.
Okay, good.
All right.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I believe that the board needs to recognize me as being an excused absence.
Yes, we did. We've already done that.
Oh, you did?
Yes,
okay.
We did.
I did not hear the vote, so
yeah.
I apologize.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
I move the Board of Supervisors ratify the appointment of Frederick W. Payne, a temporary employee for Fluid Valley County, reclassifying the appointment from county attorney to special deputy county attorney, representing the county during the Board of Supervisors Planning Commission meetings and other meetings preparation as required, effective June 5th, 2023 through June 30th, 2023.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second.
Is that Tony? Gee.
I think
okay.
That was his vote.
Yeah.
No, I vote aye, sorry. Whatever, whichever.
Okay. So we
have a motion. That was my cough there.
Okay, who did the second? Okay.
To Mr. Fairchild.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Ziegler, should I ask you if you want to do
all right. That. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone?
Aye.
Okay, I hear you, Tony. Anyone opposed? Then the motion is carried. The chair votes aye also. All right, Mr.
Yep, and so really, again, the second one is just kind of, as I said, you know, Mr. Payne's retiring, and so now we have kind of formed a new in-house county attorney department. You know, Mr. Witten is going to be serving in that role, and that's effective June 30th. And we may need to come back to the board probably maybe at the next meeting or after. We're looking at kind of where the money is going to end up a little bit. From the county attorney's budget, you know, I know we needed some additional services. You know, we were down a purchasing officer, so the county attorney helped with picking up some of the vacancy there. So, and then, you know, Mr. Witten kind of started pre-fiscal year 24. So I'm assuming we're going to need some additional funding, but I'll bring that back to the board at a next meeting. And it's not because the county attorney's department was overspending. It just, when services come needed, we need to continue to make sure we're moving forward with our legal advice. So,
okay.
So anyway, just that's the motion there for the appointment of the employment agreement appointment of Mr. Whitten.
Okay. Does someone make the motion, please?
I move the Board of Supervisors ratify the employment agreement for Daniel N. Whitten for appointments as Fluvanna County Attorney effective June 5, 2023.
Okay.
Second.
All right, motion by Mr. Fairchild and second by Mr. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
Tony?
Aye.
Okay, chair votes aye. Motion is carried. Thank you. Next we have C, fiscal year 23, CSA purchase of services supplemental budget appropriation. Brian Muller, CSA program manager.
Hello again. Before we begin, I just would like to mention that the request we have, the appropriation request that we are scheduled to make today, we are withdrawing. There have been some changes since I had submitted this to the clerk's office. So that being said, though, I would like to go ahead and provide the report because part of good governance is being able to provide updates with all departments and aspects of how we govern here in this county. So this is something you do once every 6 months, and I was wanting to give you an update as to how we've been spending, or how well we've been spending money for our purchase of services. Now, for anyone either on the board or here in the room, so what the Children's Services Act does is that it provides funding for youth that are at risk of being taken out of their family homes, either because they're going to be entering foster care or they have to go into a residential treatment program for mental health or behavioral issues. To this, we also provide funding for any student in Fluvanna County Public Schools that needs to be educated in a way that has needs that may not be able to be adequately addressed by the schools. And so in that instance, we will then enroll them in a private day school within the region. We can then ensure that the child gets the education as well as skill building necessary to be able to return back to the public schools. So we do everything we can to try to keep our youth back as remaining in the community of Fluvanna County as much as possible. So to that effect, the board provides us with a purchase of a budget that allows us to buy community services to provide interventions necessary to make sure that these children, youth, and their families get the skills and therapeutic services needed to get them some really amazing changes, progress to a point where that youth is going to be in a great place and is able to stay in the family home without any concerns of them coming back to us in the near future. So this year, the board provided our department a little over $2.8 million to address this. As of Monday, we had spent about $2,840,000 of that amount, which leaves the balance about $23,657. So we came really close this year. I would like to point out, however, that compared to last fiscal year, we have actually spent $10,000 less at this point than we did the year before. So while that balance doesn't look like it looks pretty small, we're actually spending a little bit better than we did last year. And that amount is expected to actually increase over the next couple of months as we try to figure out, which as we try to chase down vendors that may not have necessarily given us invoices and figuring out what we can take off the books. So at this point, that remaining balance can only go up over the next couple of months. Next slide. And so right here is just a comparison of our spending over the since fiscal year 2014. As you can see, we've had some highs, we've had some lows, but fiscal year 2018, which was the year that I became as the CSA the CSA program manager, we managed to keep it above that really high point. As you can see, the past several years, we've maintained it even lower than before. So Again, if you take a look at the amount in fiscal year 2022, we're about $280,000 above where fiscal year 2022 ended up. But as I said, compared to where we were last year, we're actually $10,000 ahead. So there's a very real possibility that that number could actually continue to remain our spending to keep relatively flat over the past couple years, next few years. Next slide. And that's reflected also in sort of the little trend line that you see here. That's month-to-month spending from March of 2022 up until present day. And while we see some highs, while we see some lows, the overall trend is still a reduction in spending month over month. And that's pretty much the trend we've seen pretty much consistently for the past 3 years. So we're very confident that we're going to be able to save even more money than we were last year. Next slide.
Is there a month over there we don't see? If you stopped at May?
That's correct. That is for May of this year.
Okay.
So like I said, and our spending tends to be flat, which is impressive given the fact that the amount of spending we've added or for educational placements went up about 16%. That's about $200,000. Just to give you some comparison for that, that's $200,000 less money that we're able to spend on community-based services, which is a really big service we really use to keep youth in their family homes, which is to follow that mandate that the state code requires us to do. So. We're working smarter, not harder, and it also shows with our foster care expenses, which were 20% higher this year compared to last year. Now, do we see either of those coming down next year? Not really. So it's very critical for the two teams that really build the plans and approve the funding, our family assessment planning team and our community policy and management team, to really, really stay on the ball and making sure that they're reviewing every case, making sure everyone is progressing to make sure that we are spending our money effectively and efficiently. And all this is done, I like to say, while our population, or the number of youth that we serve, has actually increased this year by about 7%. Doesn't sound like a lot, but if you provide an average amount spent per youth, it can add up pretty quickly. So the fact that we are actually saving money this year, even though we're serving more youth than we did last year, is really a testament to the team's ability to really figure out when things are going well and keeping that up, or when things aren't going so well and really try to do a course adjustment for their plan so that we can make sure that the money that we're spending is going towards really, really effective treatments and interventions. Next slide. And with all of this, the question is that's going to change with the upcoming fiscal year. Like many other departments, like many localities in Virginia, our program also is being impacted by the current stalemate that's in the General Assembly regarding the budget amendments that's happening right now. So there was an amendment that was proposed that would remove a certain task from the Office of Children's Services. That is the state agency that oversees every single locality's CSA program in the Commonwealth. And the task that they are required to do come July 1st, which is about 3.5 weeks, is they have to start telling private day schools, you can spend this much money, or you can charge this much money for a child in the schools. Up until then, schools have been able to set their rates based on their current needs and their current expenses. So there hasn't been much the amount of control over how much they've been able to increase rates has been pretty limited. So with OCS, if they're able to set these rates, basically they're setting a cap on what these schools can charge, which, in theory sounds good. However, many schools have already come out and said that if that happens, they will go around many CSA programs and go directly to the schools for that amount, for that difference that will not be paid through CSA funding. So in one way or another, the localities are still going to have to pay for this. But the thing to keep in mind is the amount that the state reimburses local spending or local localities compared to the percentage that they reimburse for CSA spending tends to be lower. So in the end, if this goes through, localities will end up spending more money just in a very roundabout way that isn't readily apparent. So if that's the case, then the amount of money that the Board of Supervisors funded through Anaheim County Public Schools, which again, I'm very grateful you all did, because based on discussions we had during the budget session, we are very, very cognizant of the needs of the mental health infrastructure in the schools. That extra amount helps, but a lot of that can really be mitigated if the schools have to pay this extra amount of money for just to educate the schools on and being compliant with federal law. So this could go away if the budget amendment passes. If they come together and Governor Young can sign something by June 30th, we'll be in good shape. But if not, this may be something that the schools may need to be aware of and require some work with the Board of Supervisors to address through some extra funding in the next year. Next slide. Despite that, all these issues and these challenges, our department and our program continues to grow. Several years ago, you all approved the use of DocuSign for a lot of routine paperwork that we do. And because of that, we've been able to pretty much use DocuSign about 30,200 times this year, which is actually about 50% more than we used last year. To give you a comparison on this, every time that I have to do a provider agreement, that would take up about an hour of my time just to mail things out, wait for things to come back and what have you. It would take about 3 weeks to actually get that agreement approved from the time I send the agreement to the provider to the time that I have a completed, approved agreement placed in front of Eric's desk. 3 weeks. Since we started DocuSign, we've been able to get contracts done in 8 hours. Anytime I have to send a purchase order out, an invoice out, I've got to hunt down people to get signatures. And that same thing goes for invoices. I got to hunt them down, and then I would have to mail it out to the vendor. Okay, on average, it would take about 15 minutes overall per invoice or whatnot. Now it takes me 5 minutes, less than. So we saved 800 staff hours. That's 20 hours of work. That's 20 weeks of my time that I can use to improve our program, which I've been able to do by running a student mentoring program for coordinators statewide. Last year, we served 35 sort of coordinators. That is 25% of our work, of our state workforce. To have that more experienced colleague to really guide them into the process and keep people around so we can actually provide this service much more efficiently on a state level. And that's for y'all's efforts and your ability or your trust in having me use some of these tools. So thank you very much. That being said, though, that's all I have. I want to thank you for your time and have me blather on and on about this. But at this point, do any board members have any questions?
Late, tried to call you today, not long before this, so sorry I missed you. Just I could ask this offline. But back to the board discussions during the budget season. I got thinking back to, you know how we were talking about that some of the burden on you all would be relieved by the schools having the additional staff to support the kids in certain ways. Is there anything that for the coming fiscal year that you see, since we have, some funding did go, I actually didn't look to see what the schools did with what we gave them. Did they did fund those positions?
The board almost fully funded their request, not completely. I don't know where the school board ended up with that breakdown of the funding.
They're
a $500,000 short. So,
but I think they added the positions in their budget, didn't they? Do you know, Mike?
That's one of those things. I don't want to cross that line. Yeah. You have to have a talk with Mr. Whitten about getting involved.
So I think they did fund the positions, and the conversation was around part of the reason. Funding the mental health positions could bring relief from the budgetary needs for you all. When will we, any feel for when we'll see that in your budget, or?
That's actually a really good question. And it depends on two factors. One is going to be if the additional funding that was used, that they received from the Board of Supervisors this upcoming fiscal year will help improve the compensation for some of their currently open positions, because in order to be able to provide mental health services, you gotta have people that are trained to do that, are qualified to do that. Valley County Schools has, at least I know of, 5 positions directly related to some form of mental health counseling or evaluation that they have been able to fill for multiple years. So if the additional funding is able to you know, bring in new people, that would be a big factor to help with that. The second factor is what's going to come out of this the new mental health coordinator position that was proposed by the Wyoming County Public Schools. But it's going to take him, at a minimum, probably about 6 months to get a good sense of what is needed and how to act and actually like design and implement the program. So, and then we actually have to actually, you know, it has to be actually rolled out, and the students will then probably start using it at that time. So
there's a curve to it.
There is quite the curve. It's not one of these things where you can instantly put someone in and suddenly like everyone starts having feeling better emotionally or whatnot. It is a slow burn.
And honestly, we probably wouldn't even remotely see any type of change until the end of the. And the fiscal year 24 that's coming up, but that would be the
until
earliest.
They find people to fill those positions. Those positions, several of them have been open for a very long time, as Mr. Moeller just said.
Yeah.
Until those positions are all filled, and then we have probably a year under our belt, would be the first time we'd be able to see something.
And
they
new
program, or if there's a change.
Right, they new program, this is pretty typical. The team that's overlapped is pretty typical. So this is not something that would be sort of like out of the blue or whatnot. This is all kind of, I wouldn't say practical, but fairly normal. I'm sure eventually we will see the savings eventually trickle down to the Children's Services Act and our program, but it may not, but probably like as Eric said, it may not be until the end of next fiscal year.
And this should be incremental, as you know, of course not every position has to be filled before you see a result.
Correct.
But I hear that need too, so thank you.
Thank you.
And then again, just as Mr. Moeller stated in the beginning, there was a motion in the package because he was originally coming back thinking he needed a little supplemental appropriation. So that motion has been stricken here, so we don't need to take any action on that. No additional funding is needed.
Right. Thank you. Thank you.
Next,
we have D, Joint Fiscal Year 24 Funding. Eric?
Yep. Let me go ahead and kind of give a little bit of a just recap from the last time. And Mr. Ted Reek is here with Jaunt. So again, Jaunt notified the county that since we didn't fund their minimum request of a little over eighty-seven thousand, we approved $76,120, which was a 5% increase over the prior year's funding. There would need to be a 10% service reduction. Again, the county could determine what service they wanted to propose eliminating or reducing. From Jaunt's standpoint, they thought the midday link would probably be a recommended one based upon use. But again, if the board says we want to do that, well, then we need to make sure and we need to decide what service is cut, and then Jaunt needs to notify the community. In addition, Jaunt notified the county about there's some fiscal year 22 rebate funds that will be coming back to the county here by the end of this month or July of $22,760. They had proposed that maybe the county would want to utilize a portion of that $22,760 or $10,950 to put towards the fiscal year 24 budget and not have to reduce, do that.
Keep
the services the same. And in addition, if the county wanted to utilize the full $22,760 rebate for the next year's budget, again, they wouldn't have to cut the service, plus they could make one of the services a five-day-a-week service, whether it's the intra-county circulator or the workday link or something like that. That's kind of where we are. So, again, the Fluvanna circulator, again, as it is, it's currently a Monday, Wednesday, and Friday service, and that's a service within the county. The midday link service, which is a Tuesday and Thursday service currently, that is a service between Fluvanna County and going into Charlottesville-Albemarle area. And that, I think, I don't want to speak on John's behalf, but I would say that provides for maybe more social and provides for services, but individuals getting the services and shopping and stuff like that. And then again, there is the workday link, which is a Monday, Wednesday, and Friday service, and that one serves more individuals going for employment and things like that. So a question was proposed about some information about jaunts cost per rider. And again, these numbers are based upon budget numbers, not actuals for fiscal year 24. So based upon the total cost, the county share, and breaking it down by the amount of riders, it gives you the full cost per rider and then the county share cost per rider. And then again, obviously from a break-even standpoint, you know, let's just say, for instance, that the county said, well, you know, say we didn't want to provide any funding and we wanted to put all the impact on the rider, what would it cost to, what's the break-even cost? And that's basically kind of the county share. But I guess you could also say is what is the total cost per trip, and maybe that's the joint one. But Ted, do you want to come up and make any comments to any of the information? Like I said, you're probably a little bit familiar with some of this than I am.
And thank you both for supplying this data.
Yeah.
No, I think you expressed it perfectly, Eric, so I can answer any questions. Roughly a $20 trip that the county is paying per person. And I actually think it might be a little lower because we're basing our ridership on our projections, and so far in 23 we're actually exceeding that, and we did anticipate an increase in ridership for 24, so that ridership is probably a little understated by what we're actually seeing.
And these, just the riders, is this a rider or is this a trip? Just for
well, in our industry we use those terms synonymously. One rider can make, if a person made a trip to work and back, we count that as two trips. So those are trips, but we also call them riders. But it's actually trips,
okay.
Individual trips.
So
one way, correct? Is that
yes? Gotcha. Yes.
So here, for looking at the workday link, you had 2,100 trips.
Yes, sir.
And so that breaks down to a county cost of roughly $20 per trip.
Right. Okay.
And then he provided some information on what it would cost to take an Uber from Martha Jefferson to Palmyra, Uber or Lyft or one of those, and it would be $35 to $40 one way. I will tell you, one time out of curiosity, I was sitting at my house. I'm like, well, could I get an Uber if I wanted to get one here? And nothing came up. So,
yeah.
You can bring people into Savannah, but they're not going to leave.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. This is Tony speaking.
Yes.
The question that I have is the point that was made that there's probably a lower cost. Correlating to that question, that statement would be, what would you say is the percentage of capacity that is currently being used on these trips, and especially if you were looking at, say, the commuting trip, would there be opportunities there if there was more consistency in the trips themselves for more riders overall and therefore lower overall costs?
Well, if I'm understanding your question correctly, none of these are 5-day-a-week services. And if you're trying to work somewhere, many employment would be a 5-day-a-week. So I would imagine, especially the workday link, seems to cover a work schedule pretty well in the city and the county, Albemarle County, that is. I would expect that to be a well-utilized service. It would give people more options. I'm answering your question correctly, but
yes,
all would be beneficial. I think we service a mix of people on the services, work as well as medical and social. I didn't bring the numbers with me what the breakdown is, but typically those are the uses that we see on these services.
Yeah, and depending on what the board was inclined to do, if the board is just looking to keep services level or if they wanted to go above, I mean, certainly, and this is just from a kind of an employment standpoint, it would probably make sense to provide some additional capacity. I mean, if someone wants to have a five-day a week job, but the service is only for 3 days a week, you know, what are they doing those other 2 days a week? But again, that's if the board wanted to do an increased capacity above that. But again, you know, that is entirely up to the board.
Can you remind me, do you show or do you remember what last year's funding was?
I want to say it was I could pull it, but it was somewhere in the neighborhood of 74,000 or something like that and some change, I believe. And then my 5% is what all nonprofits were capped at. And so I think, you know, brought it up to 76,120.
So we did increase funding.
We did over the previous fiscal year.
And I think it was mentioned that JOINT is not a nonprofit, a not-for-profit.
No, we're not a profit-making organization. Legally, we're a public service corporation.
Public service, right? But we're not considered a nonprofit.
Right, and we're owned by Fluvanna.
Yeah.
And we're owned by Nelson County as well, right. Albemarle, the city of Charlottesville, and Louisa.
Right.
So you guys are stockholders in our company.
Okay.
And
to put a plug out, we're still looking for an additional joint representative on the board. So.
Yeah. Maybe right. Caitlin would like to do it.
So if we increase the service, you will have the capacity to bring, would you be too many people?
Well, I hope it's too many people. We do have the capacity to absorb additional days of operation and ridership.
Okay. So, Erica, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I wondered, can you tell me how many individuals you serve?
I think you've asked this before, and I failed to gather that. Just doing back of the envelope, assuming every person makes two trips, going and coming, the 3,600 up there would be 1,800 individuals. And that's a real ballpark estimate. And I think Fluvanna's population is about 27,000, 28,000. So the percentage wise is not a bad percentage for public transit.
Okay. Do you have anything additional, Eric?
No, I do not. I mean, I've got some motions, okay. You know, for the board to make some determinations and some selections from. Again, there's two motions. There's one to say, you know, are we going to provide additional funding to JOINT, whether it's just keeping our service level with the 10,950 or providing, you know, increased service, expanded service at the 22,000. And if you do the 22,000, the board would have to make some determinations on what service they want to increase. And if they don't want to provide any additional funding, then I think it's up to the board to say then what service do we want to have a reduction in services to. So that's what I have on the screen for the motion.
And just one other point of clarity. So the 1,800 individuals doesn't necessarily mean it's 1,800 separate individuals. That could be an individual who uses it two times a week throughout the year that falls into that.
Yeah, that could be a way to look at it. Assuming the same person uses it frequently, but it could be a very unique people's. Some people might use it once a month and some might use it five times. So we're not taking that into account.
I was just trying to clarify, we weren't talking about 1,800 Fluvanna citizens. It's actually, it has to be some number less than that, because that would mean 1,800 people used it once a year.
It could be, but I'm pretty sure most are using it more than once a year.
Right.
And only people in Fluvanna would be using it. I don't know if there's anybody commuting from Charlottesville to come here and back. So I would put some money on that. It's probably exclusively Fluvanna residents.
Okay. So you had motions?
Yeah, Yeah, so the motions are, motion number one is for the board to approve, deny, defer, and make a selection for a supplemental appropriation. So option A is the 10,950 to maintain level service, and then option B is to expand service. And if you go with option B, and I should have made those in something instead of A's or B's, but anyway, under option B, then you would select A and B, A or B under option B. And I'm proposing that the funding for the FY24 supplemental appropriation come from fund balance. I mean, basically, once we get the money back from JOINT, I think we'll be getting it back in this fiscal year. We'll apply it to fiscal year 23, and that money will reflect in our fund balance at the end of fiscal year once we're done with our audit. So it's kind of going in one pocket right out the other. So, I mean, whether you say you're transferring, it's all the same.
So do we have any discussion on this motion, or do I need any clarification? Yes.
I'll go ahead. If anybody else wants to go. Mm-hmm. So I'll start by saying, if there's any personal part of this for me, it's that, so I grew up in Lake Monticello. My father passed of cancer in 2013. I certainly have seen and experienced the need for community services from a personal level. So that would be my personal side of it. I've seen my mother be the caregiver and need relief in many ways. And as far as, you know, an adjoining county board member said to me a few months ago, we're talking about how no decision you make fits what everybody wants. And we were talking about the fact that when we're elected, we're trying to figure out what the will is of the people. And that person said to me, you know, we weren't elected to make the easy decisions. And so we have so many factors to think about when we make a decision. And it is often. And my concern with this is, again, we haven't cut. We have additionally funded more than we did last year. And if we, you know, you think about JABA, Jefferson Area Board for Aging. Man, talk about elderly and some needs, you know. If we fund this outside of the budget cycle, then why doesn't JABA show up next time? And probably with some very legitimate needs. MACA. There are a number of them that are going to say, or certainly have the same right to come up and say, here's the impact that this has. We're not a for-profit organization. We asked you for funding to meet the needs that we see for the community. And if you don't do that, then there's going to be needs not met. Needs not met. So where do we stop doing that? And how will we make that decision between this one and the next one that comes? So there is a process that we go through that's long, that starts well before January 1 and ended the end of April to vet all of this. And we've gone through that process with every nonprofit and line item there, and I just couldn't see voting for this and creating an onslaught potentially of others that come and make the same argument.
But we're getting a rebate. I mean, it's a $22,706. I just don't see JABA or any of them coming back saying that. I've been on the JABA board probably about 17 years, and they asked, I think theirs was like $85,000, and we gave them full funding. We funded them completely. We didn't cut them 5%.
Ms. Booker, are you ready for a motion, ma'am?
Yes, I am.
All right, because I don't want to see us lose stuff that we have.
Yes.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a supplemental appropriation to FY24 joint budget of $10,950. The county maintains the current level of service, with funding to come from unassigned fund balance. That's it.
Discussion, please.
Aye. Discussion.
We
have to have a second first. Tony, I have to have a second first. And would someone second? Do I have a second for that motion?
I'll second it.
All right, we have a motion by Mr. Sheridan, a second by Mrs. Eager. And now we're opening for discussion. Mr. O'Brien?
Yeah, and sort of, and I think, you know, the Mr. Fairchild raises some good points. But I think you do as well, Madam Chair, in the sense that, you know, we don't have other organizations coming back to us with a refund. So this is a little bit of a unique opportunity, if you would, to see what the balance of services through this refund could provide to our community. And I would add that maybe, even though we did increase our services, maybe we should be more mindful of asking the people that are petitioning for the services what the impact would be if we do not meet their full funding. You know, when we have per capita funding requests, they've calculated, they've put it all in. In this case, John came to us and said we needed more than what we actually gave them, even though that was an increase. And that's been typical and traditional of a lot of the ways that we've handled the budgeting process, as to Mr. Fairchild's point of trying to be thoughtful and careful about what we do. So I'm in support of the 10,000, but I'm actually in support of increasing the ridership. And I would like to amend that motion so that we add the workday week schedule to it and we do the $22,000. There is no impact to the taxpayer because the taxpayer rate has been set at this point in time. And we would have an opportunity to reevaluate whether or not the addition of this service made sense or did not make sense, and then come back and cut back the service if necessary. I mentioned that the last meeting when this discussion came up, that, you know, we do not necessarily in this country do a great job of promoting rural transportation and or transportation in general. Having a 5-day work week schedule provided by John, I think, would go a long way to do that. But it may turn out that that doesn't actually happen that way. And I'm very happy to reevaluate that based on the metrics and what happens in terms of the cost of ridership. I do know that, and I draw a blank right now in terms of our esteemed member who serves on the John board, having promoted the intra-circular, I think. But if we can get daily ridership for commuting purposes and for work purposes, that would be amazing. And I know I'm long-winded here. I'm just going to finish with this last thought, which is when we did cut John, not we, but the previous board cut John in 2012. When we did that in 2012, I remember a young man coming up who had been in a car accident, had a brain injury, and he could not drive himself, and he did not have the support to do that. And it was his one link to be able to get into town to work to support himself. So, you know, when you look at the cost of ridership and then you look at what the impact is on the people that don't have that ability, I personally believe that we could do better from that standpoint. So I would ask, you know, the Mr. Sheridan to amend his motion to include the $22,000 and the workship ridership.
Ms. Booker, I will say that I think both of my colleagues have great points. And if we're going to expand service, that needs to be done during budget season, not at this point in time.
Okay. So, Greg, how do I handle the...
There's a motion to amend. Okay.
I'm not willing
to understand that.
Okay,
since Mr. Sheridan didn't accept that...
Okay.
The procedure would be to see if there's a second to Mr. O'Brien's motion. And if so, then the substitute motion would be on the floor instead of the original motion.
Okay. All right, you have heard the Mr. O'Brien, so we need a motion to accept Mr. O'Brien, the addendum.
No, all you need is a second.
A second. I need a second to Mr. O'Brien.
So all discussion ends until there's a second, is that right?
Yeah, you get a second, yeah. And then the discussion.
Okay.
Do we have a second for Mr. O'Brien's, what he suggested, the 22,760 instead of just the 10,950? Do we have a second?
And doing the workday circular.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we don't. It failed. The addendum failed.
Then the original motion is still on the floor.
Okay. So, the original motion by Mr. Sheridan, who seconded it? Did anybody?
Mrs. Eager did.
You seconded. Okay. All right. All in favor?
I want to add discussion.
Discussion. Go ahead.
And Well, I take it. No, that was denied, so we'll I'll cut it.
You're cutting?
Yeah.
Okay, so no more discussion. Okay. All right.
So, just to be clear, Mrs. Eager seconded my amendment to the motion. Is that correct?
No, she seconded my motion.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Okay.
And I did waiver on the rebate part of it, and I'll say that is a factor to consider.
Yes.
All right, so we have a motion, we have a second. Now I'm going to call for the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Aye.
I hear aye for Mr. Sheridan.
Aye.
Mm-hmm. You got three ayes thus far, yeah. Mr. O'Brien?
I'm going to vote no because I think we should do the $22,000.
Okay, and the chair votes no also. I think we ought to do the $22,760. Okay? All right, so we have three yes and yep. Three no's.
Three to two.
Thank you. Next is E, removal of illegal signs for the VDOT right of way.
So, Madam Chair, I'll give just a quick recap again. So, again, the board wanted to see options about eliminating temporary signs in the VDOT right-of-ways and trying to make some of Fluvanna's roadways looking less cluttered. So, one, VDOT will allow a $100 civil penalty for signs in the right-of-way if an agreement for enforcement of laws regarding illegal signs and advertising within the limits of the highway is entered between VDOT and the local government. So again, just a little recap of, you know, what are other counties or those near Fluvanna that entered into the agreement. Caroline, Spotsylvania, Chesterfield. On my next slide, I've got some additional information on what some other counties are doing. And Mr. Witten provided some additional context too from a county he was in. Does Fluvanna do some or all of the removal of legal signs from the VDOT right away? Fluvanna would, again, the answer, Fluvanna would be responsible for the sign removal. Does VDOT or Fluvanna levy the civil penalty? Again, answer, Fluvanna would levy the civil penalty. And what portion of the levied civil penalty remains with Fluvanna County versus VDOT? And answer, Fluvanna would retain all. And can, you know, there's a discussion about right-of-ways, and again, we want to make sure that if we're pulling signs that we're pulling them that are within VDOT's right-of-way, not pulling them from someone's private property. As VDOT said, you know, we've got a list of different right-of-ways, but if there's any question about that, they would certainly recommend pulling any type of plats or anything like that showing the right-of-ways. So a little bit on what some others are doing. So speaking about Chesterfield, Caroline, and Spotsylvania, and then Mr. Witten provided some context for Warren County. So Chesterfield County, I forgot to pull this out. Chesterfield County actually has a department of, again, big county. They have a Department of Community Enhancement. And I had a conversation with one of the individuals from their department. And why am I not getting the title right now? So a little bit with the way Chesterfield County does it. So they do enforce the removal of legal signs. They do it as an ongoing countywide beautification process. They do not collect the $100 levy. What the gentleman told me is, one, just the time factor to go through and collect that money, whether, you know, you're doing an invoice, trying to collect it, if you have to go to court, they're like, it's just not worth it. From their standpoint, though, it's been very beneficial. To have the ability to remove the signs. And one thing that Chesterfield does, they actually have, so they got some staff that do it, but they also have something that's called a community volunteer program. So there's very specific training that people would have to go to be able to do it. So on and so forth. But again, Chesterfield just does it. They just pull the signs just to kind of clean up the roads. Mr. Witten said, again, Warren County, where he was in previously, they do the same thing. They remove temporary illegal signs. They did not collect the $100 levy. Caroline County, again, they enforce the removal of illegal signs. And Mr. Miles had some conversation with one of his planning counterparts, and again, they said they don't impose a civil penalty for pickup of signs in the VDOT right away, and they remove the signs about once a month. They'll call and let those individuals that have the signs, let them know that off-site signage is not allowed in the county. And they said, you know, it has curbed the signage a little bit, but it doesn't mean that signs don't, you know, keep on popping up a little bit, but it's curbed it. And then Spotsylvania County also enforces the illegal signs. They had a policy that was adopted in 2020. I could not find anything, and I wasn't able to get in contact with anyone specifying if they collect $100 or not, but looking at the policy didn't specify anything about collecting the levy. So again, I can't speculate one way or the other, but it's kind of seeing what other people do and kind of understanding that probably the administration piece of the $100, there's probably more costs to build $100 than there is worthwhile from collecting. So those are just some examples of some what other counties are doing. I don't think I really have a whole lot of other information. Any, you know, again, if we did it, we'd have to determine who did it. You know, I mean, and, you know, there have to be some very specific training done for those that do it, so they're doing it appropriately and making sure you're not pulling things from private property and things like that. But again, that's kind of entirely up to the board. So I'm happy to answer any questions. And actually, Mr. Scott Thornton with VDOT, he is also here too, if there's any, you know, other kind of VDOT questions that the board may have.
Okay, so I'll open it for the discussion about this. Anyone have anything they'd like to add?
I have a question for Mr. Dahl. Just curious as to whether the Planning Enforcement Division of Fluvanna County has sufficient man hours to enforce this policy.
So at this moment, I would say no, because we are vacant a code compliance officer. So, So right now, no. I mean, you know, asking who is, I was looking at one thing here. Let me see here.
That department consists of how many people?
One.
Yeah, the code, yeah.
No.
Oh, planning? Well, I mean...
Five?
Well, I mean, planning has those that are out, can go out and about. It's really, with the vacant position, there's four people. You know, from building inspections, you know, you've got three people that are really out and about. Looking at Spotsylvania, it says, enforcement is conducted by the Utilities Public Works Department, the zoning administrator, or duly authorized code enforcement officers. So some localities use a little combination of some things, and so, you know, if the board wanted to go forward with that, I think we would just have to determine what was the best way.
Whatever we decide, we still have to follow the steps by taking pictures and writing up and all of that.
Yes, and speaking with someone, I'm not gonna call any of them out. Some of them, you know, they definitely. Do some due diligence and paperwork on them. I don't know if everyone is taking a picture of every single sign and everything, but I think there is due diligence being done by the counties that are enforcing this.
As we know, we will be getting a code compliance person.
Yes.
At some point. And as we discussed, I think, in another meeting, that $100, and I'm not sure which way I want to go with it. Yes, that $100 probably does not have a break even to it, except for if somebody gets enough $100 fines, then eventually they stop doing it, and you eventually have a break even, because now you have less time of the code enforcement person out there collecting signs.
You know, the one thing I would probably say, and then let the gentleman with the legal background to my right, you know, talk about that. What would really happen? I mean, again, the county would have to issue an invoice, submit an invoice to the individuals, and I know there's some specific guidelines. I can pull up the memo from VDOT for what we have to do for that. You know, I don't know what it would take. I mean, you know, someone could dispute that they owe the $100, and then, you know, I guess I'll leave it to these gentlemen to say what is the next step.
Matt, can I add some now? When we started talking about this, I could tell you the next week I saw signs moved. I think the more we talk about it, because all these signs are pretty much some of my local people. I think if we do a campaign to get the information out that this is happening and this is what we're talking about, and give people an opportunity to self-correct, rather than go in with a removal and pictures and the full glass of it all. Let's decide how much time we're going to give people to get the message out and see if it does not improve. I just feel like it will.
And I've got a couple questions. Well, one for Mr. Whitman. Did y'all ever have anybody come back and come after the county and warn because they removed a sign that was on private property and was not an illegal sign? Step to the microphone. That'd be the simplest thing.
So in Warren County, our zoning administrator, he would drive around in his truck to pick up signs. He would leave them in the back of his truck for a few days. Normally, he would, if it was like, you know, a developer, you know, trying to sell houses, he would call and say, hey, I picked up your signs. You can't do that. A lot of times, they would come and pick up the signs from the zoning office. So I'd imagine if a private individual, if they called the county, he would have given them their sign back. I don't recall any instances. Okay. Yeah,
because that's one of my biggest fears, is that somebody takes one that is not an illegal sign, and then we're held liable for that. But here's the other question I got. I'm not sure whether this would be for Mr. Whitman or Mr. Payne, but like I'm driving by, and I'm seeing construction going on, and people are just putting the sign out because they're doing the construction, just to let people know that it's current construction going on. Well, that's probably still in the VDOT right-of-way.
I think there is some language, and let me pull this up. There was some language in...
That would be my question. Because, I mean, there's one going on currently. It's a really big project. Mm-hmm. The guy's just got a couple signs out there to say, hey, I'm doing the project.
There was something about...
You mean the common practice, mm-hmm. just the whoever's doing the work, right. putting signs in the work,
correct.
By John.
Correct.
Yeah. I don't think that makes any difference.
That would still be illegal. It would
if
still be
in the
right
way. Yeah.
Okay.
And why couldn't he put it back a few feet?
He can.
You're still going to see it from the road.
He can, assuming he's got permission.
I'm imagining he's got permission because I imagine
if it's his property or if he's doing the work for the owner, then. Well.
And I'm not trying to be argumentative. I just, those types of things, I just wonder.
I want to make sure I answered Mr. Sheridan's question.
Yeah, you did. You did. Like I said, very well. I understand what you're saying. So that sign placement either would back up or it's illegal.
Right.
Yeah.
And it would be like any other sign.
Right. I think we have gotten the information that we asked for, and in fact, we've gotten more than we asked for, because I was reading today from flippy-floppy signs to all kinds of signs. And so now that we are highly intelligent about signs, I think we need to give the opportunity for people who are putting out these signs that we are looking at it, and there may be a possibility that we may go further than just notifying people and being polite for them to be conscientious of where they put the signs. And I hear, who is that? Is that Tony?
I'm sorry, that's
go ahead,
me,
Tony.
Madam Chair, sorry. I was going to ask another question to the county administrator, which is, because we a couple of years ago worked hard to have a county blight ordinance put through. And so my question to him was, in terms of enforcement, as you know, sort of a general percentage, I'm not trying to put anybody on the spot or make anybody look bad or anything like that, but in terms of our ability to enforce, blight, could you comment on if you thought our efforts were, mildly successful, somewhat successful, very successful, or lacking.
Well, I mean, again, the spotlight ordinance is based upon, it's a complaint based.
You said blight.
Blight, is that what you're
yes,
talking about? Yes, spotlight.
No, I think he's thinking about the one we put if somebody has a roof hanging over and that can be harmful if children came by.
I think I've been criticized for saying that, there are lots of rules out there that we break on a regular basis, but I don't want to make a rule that you know, in essence is something that we casually enforce, and you know, for a problem that is, sure, it is there, but is it an increasing problem? I don't really know. And is it a problem that you can solve? I don't really know. If, you know, one county enforces it by removing signs once a month, if I am a business owner who is able to generate more than $100 a month of revenue once a month, I would probably put that sign back out there the very next day. So I don't want to create something that is just more work for somebody to do.
So the signs that went away, I've mentioned it here before, there was an individual in the county that went and got those. And
did they come back?
What's that?
Did they come back?
Come back.
The signs.
I don't think it was the owner of the signs, ma'am. Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't an individual went and got...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So there have been a few that have come back, and to tell you the truth, the ones that I've seen, like the turkey said, I don't think are the ones that were there before. And before they went away, I think the number on the right, as you're coming out by the bank, mm-hmm. I think it was at one point this year, I counted like 11 or 12 signs there. It is a chronic thing, and it's trash. I mean,
but it's
people
improved since you haven't seen 11.
Yeah, but to Mrs. Booker's point of, you know, is it a matter of getting the message out there that changes people's opinions? Is it a matter of enforcement? And what I'm focused on right now, because we're talking about essentially asking our administration to enforce a policy, is, you know, do we really have the tools in place to enforce that policy, and are those, you know, are those tools going to get attention today because this is the priority of the day, when in fact we already have priorities from the past that are important priorities, you know, trash on the roads, blight on people's property, et cetera, et cetera. And so I just don't want to short circuit efforts that have already been put in place to try to address some previous problems. And I'm not saying there isn't a problem there. I'm just not sure that tasking administration to enforce that versus, as Mrs. Booker suggested, putting out the fact that the county is not going to be particularly friendly to these kinds of items and wants to inform people this is what we should do, versus the actual cost of casually going out and picking up these signs. I just don't know what the balance is there. So that's what I'm just trying to get an answer to.
The average one of those signs is not a local business. The majority of them are signs that, for example, a company is paid to go out and place them. We were throughout Louisa Saturday, and so many of the same signs that are here are there. These people are in the business of putting those out and knowing it's against code and knowing what their losses are. And if they continue to get by with it, so the mass of them, they're going to continue to do it. And so if we don't do something about it, it is just going to get worse. There's no motivation for people to stop doing it. So when you have people that are in the business of placing the signs, again, they know the losses. We've got to do, you know, nobody was listening to a Board of Supervisors meeting and heard that we're going to enforce sign issues, and they went out and picked their signs up.
And I understand that, but there are like 154 counties in Virginia, which, you know, we've had four that basically have some enforcement policy with VDOT. And of those four or five, none of them are actually imposing the fees, because the cost of doing so and persecuting those is above and beyond the cost-benefit analysis, right?
Yeah.
So that's my concern, is like, you know, you, as an example, you're not supposed to pass a red light at any point in time, but at 2:00 in the morning when a red light is out there, I'm not sure that people don't pass that red light. You know, I'm just saying there's certain things that people do. I'm not sure.
Just wanted to clarify that since I did the driving school.
I'm not saying I did, but I'm just saying that, nobody's able to enforce that at that point in time. So I just want to make sure that we're not putting something out there as opposed to, what Ms. Booker suggested, saying, look, folks, we could take another step and measure here and it could be kind of nasty, because even the counties that have signed with VDOT aren't taking that extra step.
I agree.
I get your point, Mr. Fairchild. I just am kind of concerned about what we're asking staff to do.
Okay.
I agree with not making, at this point, putting the fine in place. What I'm saying is the fine.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with not doing the fine at this place. Well, I believe that we need to start we need to have a policy around removing them. And then if that's not successful, then we can talk about the fine.
Do we have board members that agree what Chris is saying, that we need to do that? Because we need to, bring it to a close. I think we have had opportunity to discuss it. And you heard
Mr. Fairchild would make a motion.
Wait a minute, Ms. Eager has a question. Go ahead, Ms. Eager.
Mr. Dahl, who in the county would go out and pick up the signs?
I would have to look at someone within community development, probably Mr. Miles or when the new code compliance officer comes on, it would probably fall in kind of that purview a little bit.
And it wouldn't be something that would have to be done even week?
No, I mean, it could be out. I mean, again, looking at some others, when I spoke to some of the folks at Chesterfield, they based theirs on kind of a priority standard. They address things, signs that were in the medians and stuff like that first. Any things that were on major roadways, things like that, intersections. And so, I mean, like looking here, Spotsylvania has a policy governing enforcement of signs. So I think if the board said we want to do this, maybe we need to come up with the agreement, and then we come up with a policy for how it's going to be implemented. And maybe it's not something where, because I don't gather that the board wants to hire an individual to do sign removal every day. I mean, so it's going to be it'll just have to be a supplemental thing as staff is out and about. It's
basically giving them permission if they go by a sign, they have time, they can stop and pick it up.
Yeah, I mean, and again, there's specific training, and they would need to know exactly what are kind of the barriers or the right of ways that they're pulling the signs within. I mean, they have to be very clear in that before they're out there pulling signs.
That's my biggest fear, is we set ourselves up for some type of liability.
I think we should have a list from what we're going to do first. What's the next thing until we get to a situation where we do have to pick the signs up? Then it needs to be from the least invasive to, you're not doing it, now we have a problem. I think we need to do all we can to get that message out before we start picking up the signs, taking pictures, sending people reports. And even if we don't even charge them $100, it's still a lot of work for someone to do.
Well, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, I didn't mean to interrupt there, but Mr. Dahl didn't have an opportunity to respond to my question. And I guess I would also ask him to add on to the original question as to, how successful are our blight enforcements? Based on the discussion that the board is having right now, how successful do you think, non-invasive, non-penalty type enforcement would be ultimately? And I know that's a subjective question. Again, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, and the board can make a decision, but ultimately I think it's just one of those things where we can just, as Mrs. Booker has already suggested, we can put it out there and saying, keep our community nice and clean and safe. We could be nasty, but we don't want to be nasty. And maybe there are such repeat offenders, as Mr. Fairchild has pointed out, that we need to take this step. But I'm just wary of tasking administration to do something that they don't already have enough time to do everything else. That's all.
I mean, so to answer your question about the blight, I mean, the blight gets into a little bit more of a complicated answer, because you're dealing with people on people's property, and that gets, I don't know, I can let Fred chime in. I mean,
there's a process you have to go.
There is a very, very technical process for what you have to do.
Well, very successful with that.
You said we have or have not.
We have not. I can show you many places. Well, I think we've tried.
No, I don't want to imply that we haven't been successful. I was asking the question as to whether we have or have not been successful.
I will say we don't get a ton of complaints, but it doesn't mean that they're not out there. I mean, so some of the ones that we have gotten, they were more specific to, I mean, because this really kind of originated out of the Columbia Area Renewal Task Force, CARE Task Force. So we've got some properties that were considerable public safety hazards. I mean, one house that's kind of leaning into the Route 6 and things like that, but it is a slow grind, I will tell you, to try and hold the property owners accountable. So from the spotlight standpoint, I think it's going to be a lot slower of a grind to do that. I mean, you know, if the board wanted to make spotlight and compliance more of a county facing thing, where county is out initiating all that, you would need a person that is out there doing that on a regular basis versus you know, this is kind of part of their other duties and things like that.
And I think I heard you saying where you were going with that was there's a whole lot more involved than here.
There is.
That's not what we're talking about here. And somebody passing by Turkey Sand who stops and picks up some signs, I'm just not very concerned about how much labor that is for somebody that happens to work for the county and goes by for 2 minutes, pulls the signs out of the ground and brings them back. Understanding there's some process
but
people know after.
But it's not just 2 minutes, right? I mean, they've got to photograph it and they got to take it and they got to document it. You know, it's not just 2 minutes, right? And they got to do it. Well, if there's 10 signs out there, you've assigned that guy to do it for probably the next 2 hours, right?
That's the rest of what I was saying.
Ron, I apologize.
It's okay. I know you're not here. Understanding that when they get back, there is still some process involved.
Yeah, there's documentation and that would need to be done to make sure that we are meeting the thresholds of VDOT. And so, Scott, is there a streamlined, Mr. Thornton, is there a streamlined way of doing it?
I just think we can come on down and come from the least restrictive to the
I guess the most streamlined way would be come work for me at VDOT.
Are you asking me or
you know, we have to do the same thing. We have to document where they were picked up. Our crews have tablets. We send our crews out, they take pictures of it with their tablets. They take pictures of the signs where they were. Tablets also have a map on them with our stuff, so we know where they are. They're on the right of way. If they're not on the right of way, does that mean we don't make mistakes? No, it doesn't mean that. But as you alluded to, we also keep the signs for 45 days. So somebody calls and says, "Hey, you picked up my church sign, and it was on our property. We like our sign back." Okay, and our crews will go back out and return the sign to them.
So I guess I would ask you as a manager, do you believe that as a use of your resources that even though it exists that you have to do this, is this an effective use of your resources?
I think it's part of our duties. I mean, I have two people assigned every day per area headquarters to pick up trash, clean up things on the roadside. And this is just part of it.
We have to
remove these things. So I would say yes, it is an effective use of resources. I think it's a I just don't have the, I have a limited number of resources to do it. So as we had, when Mr. Dahl and I had started this conversation a few months back, my explanation was, I've got 9 people in one area headquarters, 17 people in the other area headquarters. So, and basically 2 of those folks per area headquarters are assigned to Covina. So it may as well be 4 people when you consider it, 2 on the north end, 2 on the south end. And daily, they return with over 30 signs. And that's just between that and filling up a dumpster twice a week with roadside trash. If I had more, I'd take more signs up and fill up more dumpsters. But I don't have that. So yes, it is an effective use of signs, or of use of resources. It's just, there's just not enough, because Covina is a large geographic area to cover for just that limited amount of people.
Yeah, if it was, is, I mean, I guess let me say this, if it was easy as grabbing a big bunch of signs right at an intersection, I would say that's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
I am concerned with the documentation from the documentation standpoint a little bit, again, not really knowing what that entails and what that would really look like. And then, we have to keep the signs, where are we going to keep the signs and things like that. I mean,
to me, it's either we're going to have them there or we're not. Again, the mass of those people aren't going to go, oh, Savannah County. And where would they, other than putting one ad in a paper, where would they even find that out that we put a policy in place? And so, and even if we did, the mass of them is, if there's a 540 phone number on the bottom of that sign for Mosquito Squad or whatever, they're not going to see that ad. We're either going to make a decision that we're going to do something about it or we're not. They're going to be there, in my opinion, or they're not. There's not going to be any initiative from the people that are putting in there. And I say any. Again, and I don't know the number is 80%, but let's say the number is 80-ish percent of 75% or 70 of the ones that are professionally put there, that it's not Joe's local mowing service. And those people aren't going to get the message from it being in the paper. We're either saying we're, which is the bigger burden, that we're going to have that mess all over, especially really around Lake Monticello, or we're going to make an attempt to stop it.
Yeah.
So, good question here. Is the primary enforcement of removing the signs going to fall on VDOT or on county staff?
No, it's county staff. By doing this, county staff, VDOT is authorizing county staff to act as agents on behalf of VDOT.
And this would be in addition to what my folks do daily. So this would supplement what I already have crews at my area headquarters doing.
For example, if we were to ask you as the VDOT, manager for the area, just say, can you make sure that your crews check, turkey sack on a regular basis for the next 2 months? Would that be something that your staff would be willing to do for us?
We typically cycle through the county. We do approach areas for trash pickup. So what my crews do, they have assignments, and that crew is assigned for dead animal removal, trash pickups, and they go out based on the work orders. So when that work order comes in, they, for the week, plan out, okay, I've got to go here, 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 here. So turkey sag is at that area, but if I have all my work orders at the southern end of the county for that particular month, I have to put my resources where the requests are. Sending them up for anything that wasn't a safety issue, that would not be an efficient use of my resources at that point.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I guess one last question, I'll shut up. I know Mr. Sheridan wants to speak, but I guess, Mr. Dahl, do our current enforcement officials and our people that would be enforcing this have tablets and the GIS mechanisms to mark the signs, or is that something we have to invest in?
Mr. Miles, yes. I mean, yes, some of the folks that go out in the fields, they have...
Mr. Thornton, hang on. Let him go, because I've got a question for you.
Yes, they have tablets when they're out in the field now. As far as pinning it from a GIS standpoint, that I don't know. I'll have to let Mr. Miles speak on that.
Yeah, the site addressing and the putting it into the tablet and pinging it or geocoding it or whatever, we can do that. But most of the time we would take pictures. And if we did enforcement at Turkey Seg, we would do it at every lake entrance.
The worst one's
actually Monash.
Do you have VDOT right away?
In the VDOT right
away. No, do you have that on your pad?
They've indicated, and we've talked to the residency office, that they have layers and things like that, so we could update our GIS this summer, but we're trying to work on completing the comp plan, and so some of this other enforcement, I spend about probably 5 or 6 hours a week currently, about 45, 50 hours a week doing code enforcement. And some of it's not just field work, but we do post zoning signs and pick up zoning signs. So when we're seeing those, we'll sometimes, if they're ones that are hanging in the right of way or what have you, but and like Mr. Dahl said earlier, when we spoke with Carolyn County, it's the same population and size, similar to us. So we tried to use that. Their residency staff, area headquarters staff, whatever, pulls a lot of the signs before cutting grass, because that was one of our concerns, is that we don't want to, just have these contract squads spread, and then you have one sign that's, a fast sign that's whole, and all of a sudden it's now five pieces and things like that. So partnering with VDOT is the current way that we do it. And until we get that code compliance officer in place, I think it's kind of hard for us to determine
Okay, so you need a question.
I have one question for Ms. Thornton, and it's going to take about 2 seconds. Is Turkey Sag part of the VDOT right of way, or is that Lake Monticello?
That has some of our right of way on it.
All the way up to the gate?
We'll have to double check and tell you exactly.
I'm just wondering if they're on your right of way or if they're in the Lake Monticello.
The signs that we reported last time that we picked up, it was about 50 signs we removed the other week. They were within our right of way.
Okay.
But I can get you a map.
I lied. I have one more question.
You're bad.
I did. I'm sorry. I'm a bad person. If you got complaints about those signs, that would go straight to y'all, would become part of your work thing. Correct?
Yes, sir.
Again, the thing, I want to make sure VDOT has job security. And so the more citizens that go onto their work order request form on the website and report issues, that all funnels through VDOT and they have to take care of it.
That is correct. And I believe I've talked about this.
Yes,
we have our website, our 1-800-4-ROAD. Those generate work orders that we have a timeline to track. It's not always as fast as people want it.
We've had that issue when we've had trees that we've had to cut out of the road with the fire department that we turn into you guys. You can't do everything all the time. Thank you.
Well, I know. I think it's Blue Valley Review had the front page talking about signs. Front page, and it goes Charlottesville. I see Blue Valley Review in Charlottesville. I mean, we need a graduating way we're going to deal with this, starting from the least, from the most, I don't know why we say, comfort level down to the real fitness certain, we're going to do something about it before we start charging or pulling up signs. That's just my social service people.
Mosquito squad with the 540 phone numbers and meetings will be under review. I'll make a motion if you're all ready, or I can wait too.
Yep, there's a motion on it. Go ahead.
I move the Board of Supervisors adopt a resolution for enforcement of laws regarding illegal signs and advertising within the limits of the highway.
Do we have a second? Motion dies.
All righty.
Okay. So, this is now
commission.
Just being friendly.
I know it. All right. So, what do you want? What do you want administration to do to further this, or we let it?
I don't want to be in a position, in respect of my fellow board members. What I want to avoid from here, and of course, I'm a board member who's hearing a lot of this from citizens, because there are two gates on 53 that are in my district, and actually, and a lot of it's coming in at the roundabout of 653 also. So those touch points are in my district. And I don't want to be in a position where I'm sounding like, well, hey, I tried to get something done about it and nobody would do anything. If we don't do anything, then all of my only choice, however politely I try to word it, is to say to citizens who elected me, I tried to do something about it and nothing's happened.
I hear you, Chris, but I'm saying that we do something. But I'm not, but I'm saying let's do it gradually and see how it works. And we have Mr. Miles and people out in the community. They can come back and tell Eric what they saw, and you can build up a report. Yes, they're still going after we have put out some information saying that we're looking at the signs, you have them on there, and may go to a more forceful position. We don't want to do it. I think we're still going to do something. I don't think we're just going to throw up in the air and do nothing. Do you all think we're not going to do anything?
The point I was trying to make, Mr. Fairchild, is I think right now, being short-staffed, handing more jobs with what we've got on our plate to do right now shortens us. But I think the biggest thing is educating the people. How many calls a month are you getting, Mr. Fairchild, or complaints about these signs?
Let's say five. Yeah, but I'm going to answer your question. It's not like that. It's not like, you know, it's sporadic. It's, you know, if it's eight total.
Okay.
It's a representative of that. There are other people feeling that haven't made the effort.
Here's going to be my thing, and I'm not trying to pass the buck, but they have two guys that's their assigned duties and jobs is to go around and do that. If those eight people, instead of contacting you, contact the VDOT work order site, then all of a sudden, each month, if they've got 8 to 10 things saying, hey, come check on these signs, it's probably a good bet within a month that y'all get around there to do that. What do you think, Mr. Thornton?
Yes, sir.
And like I said, this is not a huge issue for me.
Yeah.
In Kent's store, there are not too many mosquito signs. Okay, we buy a bug zapper and plug it in. I'm not trying to be funny, but you know what I'm saying. Yeah, with as far as population, we don't have that. And it is a huge issue around the lake. I mean, I literally drove by today and saw somebody putting a sign up. They were putting three of the exact same sign up. Bam, 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 right there together. And I thought about you and this. But I think that, right now, if that doesn't handle it, then we can come back and visit this. I think that's the same point that Mr. Dahl was trying to make.
Well,
we got guys that are stressed with us trying to get water lines and everything else in and done. Until we get fully staffed, and I bet you if you compare the staff numbers with, what was it, Caroline? Spotsylvania and Chesterfield, throw them out the window.
Yeah, there's two.
Again, Chesterfield has a whole department.
They got a department that's what their job is. I mean, if we want to hire two more people, we probably could do this.
We could always put up a sign, same signs are not permitted to be here.
Or then they take our sign.
Yeah.
No, they won't take our sign, and it's the order of the county.
Well, but Mr. Fairchild, that might be a thing, though. I think that might be a better way to handle it right now, is to make sure that if these are eyesore, like you're talking about, or safety issue, we get those complaints to VDOT, and he's got two guys that every day go around, and once a month, they just drive a little loop around the lake, you know.
I mean, again, you know, for me, the more we can funnel things through VDOT's online work order system, I mean, if from a stopgap standpoint, I mean, I think that is the best bet. So instead of, you know, I mean, I know they're trying to inform their supervisor, but if they can direct that call to, or the call, or just the couple minutes it's taken to go onto the online site, if they've got the accessibility to do that, again, it's not gonna happen right then and there. But you know, from VDOT's standpoint, they've got to address those work orders in the system, and they're going to get to those areas at a certain point. To me, that is the best initial bet, or the best initial solution, but, you know, without county staff having to do it.
Yeah.
Madam Chairman, I think,
yes, sir.
I think it would help, in any event, help allay this problem, have the board speak on it. Mm-hmm. And the board, of course, only speaks as a body. Mm-hmm. And no member speaks for the board. One way to do this is to identify the problem, to recognize the existence of the problem, and memorialize VDOT to continue with their efforts and try to amp those up to the extent possible, and then publicize that action. Mm-hmm. If you did that, then somebody would know that takes care of the first part of Mr. Fairchild's problem, because then it's not a question the board didn't do anything. Because the next thing is going to happen is it's going to become very popular with people, and they're going to be having, why can't I get a county inspector out on my property? And you're going to be confronted with a request to hire additional inspectors or whatever it might be. I think you really should lay this to rest one way or the other. And when I say that, I don't mean forget about it, but note that you have, you as a board have recognized the problem and encourage as a first movement to encourage people to report illegal signs to VDOT through their, either by phone or by in person or on their website, and see whether that increases the number. Yeah.
And we can try, and
it doesn't mean you can't change your
mind. Right.
And we can try and push the word out too from a social media standpoint, to direct people more to VDOT site, and you know, just showing them snapshots of where they go to, and again, maybe that does provide a good inflow of requests and work orders going to their site, and that's what we would certainly want.
Here's an interesting question. Can the county put a sign on a public right of way as a public body?
No, they cannot.
That answers that. I was going to say, can we put a sign up that even said, this is an illegal sign? Got a problem with the illegal sign? Call the VDOT number, right?
And we have Flavan Review reporter here, and she's been listening to all of this, and she'll be able to.
Mr. Fairchild, I will say this much, I can possibly save you some time. If you get complaints about one, I'm always out riding around. I got a complaint the other day about some trees that were in a bad place. So we drove right by there. I got out and took pictures, sent them to Mr. Dahl, and he poured Mr. Thornton. So I'd be more than happy to do that, because I'm driving anyway.
Well, thank you.
Likewise. I mean, I appreciate Mr. Fairchild's point and his desire to, you know, not have this kind of nonsense around, but I'm just concerned about, you know, the ability for us to do something effective here.
So
and I get that we could do something kind of effective, but I just don't know what the message is, and so I'm torn about it.
Yeah, and we need to come back to it at some point if needed, so that we can see how effective it is.
This is going to sound maybe odd from the person who made the motion. I think we're beating a dead horse. And
we always beat them.
Let's just say let's find a way to advertise that the board has discussed it and see what happens from there.
We'll try and push out information about.
I'd be happy to make a motion that from the board's contingency fund that we spend $1,000 promoting this effort.
Let's move forward.
Okay, I think we have killed the horse by now.
DDOT's gonna have to help remove us.
I hope it was worth it and that we are satisfied with the direction that we're moving. Can I hear a yes, consensus? All right, then let's move on. Appointments, board, commission, and committee appointments, Mr. Dahl.
Yep, okay, so we have, for two different boards, committees, and commissions, we have EDA, and then we have Library Board of Trustees. So for EDA, we have three appointments that we need to fill for three EDA at-large positions. There are two incumbents that are seeking reappointment, and then you have three additional applicants as well that are interested in.
So
assuming you want to keep the incumbents in, yes. Yeah, so if you. Yep.
Okay.
And then for the Library Board of Trustees at-large position, again, there's one incumbent seeking reappointment, and then there are, again, two additional individuals.
Okay.
So I think online, again, we normally allow the individuals that are being set for the appointment to speak. I don't know if, I believe maybe the one Jeff Potter, potentially.
Jeff is Jeff, I'm sure.
Yep, it is.
Hi, neighbor.
Jeff, okay. So we're going to do the EDA. Is Jeff the EDA?
He is currently on EDA. I think he was just appointed.
Right.
He was last appointed a month or two.
Okay. I'd like to say I believe that Jeff Potter has an incredible resume, and I think he would be very good to be returned to the EDA.
Okay, are we going to look at the incumbents first and
see if anyone?
Well, I think we should let people speak if they're there and there and there.
Okay, we have Jeff online. Jeff, would you unmute yourself and speak to us? I think he's trying to unmute.
He needs some help with that computer. I'm available.
Yeah.
He did not get to speak to us last time.
Yes. So
right. Well, I'll just hold it.
Thank
with
you,
my
Jeff.
Space bar of the devil. Good evening.
Good evening.
I'm actually out of state right now attending a finance conference here in Florida. So thank you for allowing me to speak. I know last time there was a little confusion on contact information, which is why I wasn't able to appear in front of the board, even though, as my neighbor said, I usually listen in anyway. So anyway, Jeff Potter, been on the board or the EDA just one meeting. We have another meeting coming up next week, but been in the county 18 years and highly involved in fire rescue and just looking to do something different. I think it's a good discussion we had last time at the meeting. We made some decisions to adjust where we were putting in the for funding for holding right now with the interest rates going up, it was beneficial to the county. But lots of tech background, very familiar with technology and startups and data centers and those types of things, which I think is a little facet that not a lot of people have in the area. Plus, I'm representing the Columbia District because I'm on that part of the county. So happy to answer any questions anybody has for me. And once I get done from here, I've got another meeting I've got to go to.
Okay, any questions for Mr. Potter? If not, thank you, Mr. Potter. Anyone else?
As I'm looking at all the names and I'm looking here in the room and I'm looking online, I'm not sure who MG is online, but I don't see any initials of MG for any of the appointees. So I don't think we have anyone else to speak.
All right, so the next incumbent is Valerie Palamountain. Anybody have any comments?
about her staying?
Specifically about her or in general about it all? In general, I see no reason not to put all three incumbents, meaning in the two boards.
Library too.
Yes.
Okay.
And I think if we miss another opportunity to have Mr. Singh involved, we've missed the boat.
Okay, so you are saying that the incumbent for EDA and for the library board, we put them in, and then for the EDA, you are suggesting Mr. Singh?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, anybody?
Yes, I would like to second Mr. Fairchild's motion.
All right.
Well, let me understand.
Go ahead.
Are we doing three EDA people?
Yes.
Three.
Okay. Three for EDA.
Okay.
All right, yep.
So, we're going to do a motion. Go ahead and make the motion for Mr. Singh.
Well, individually for him, or
all of them?
No, I think you have a motion for Fred and
Potter. We put the incumbents in. Do we need it?
No, I think
you can. Yeah, Madam Chair, I'd like to make a motion.
Hold up, Tony, hold up a minute.
You should treat the two bodies separate. I don't see any reason.
Yeah, we got to. We're doing the EDA first.
Yeah, I think you can do a lot.
So, Mr. Fairchild, you want to go ahead?
I'll make a motion that on the Economic Development Authority, we reinstate the two incumbents and appoint Mr. Singh as the additional.
Could you put in the beginning term and ending term?
I'm sorry, and the incumbents would be Jeffrey Potter and Valerie Palamountain, and I had just said Mr. Singh because of Raj Vendra Singh, with the terms beginning 7/1/2023, ending 6/30/2027.
All right, second. I think Mr. O'Brien wanted to. Is that all right?
Sure. No, I'm happy to defer to Mrs. Eager.
Okay. All right, we have a motion by Mr. Fairchild and a second by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Now we go to the Library Board of Trustees.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the following board commissions for the committee appointments: Board of Trustees, Library Board of Trustees at Large, Felicity Casparoli-Gooch, for the term of 7/20/23 to 6/30/2027.
Okay, do we have a second? All right, it was moved by Mr. second by Mrs. Eager. All in favor?
O'Brien misspoke.
Yes.
I think I heard him say that the term would end on 6/30/23, and it's actually 6/30/27.
It is 6/27.
6/30/2027.
Okay, we've made the correction. All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye.
All right.
Thank you all. Thank you. And Mike, you had something?
No, ma'am. Poor Mr. O'Brien's over there. Sounds like he's coughing up a little.
I know, and he has on mute. Why are we hearing him?
He's not on mute.
Yeah,
what?
He's
unmuted. Not
yeah.
Okay. All right. On to the next one.
Madam Chair, I'm trying to beat my cough, and I don't always
cover succeed. Your mouth. I'll put your.
I'm alone and covering my mouth, and I wouldn't wish this on
you. All right, Mr. Thornton, you are on board. Thank you.
Please
say that this is VDOT Quarterly Report for people who are listening. And we have Mr. Scott Thornton, VDOT Residency Administrator.
Good afternoon, Board.
Good afternoon.
So just wanted to provide a quick report on everything we've been working on. So our crews have been out. We're doing a lot of patching and repair work in advance of our scheduled surface treatment. So if you've seen our crews out doing patching pavement eradication for pavement markings, we've got scheduled work, whether that's latex surface treatment, very similar to the things that happened on 53 and 15 last year. It's a cycle we're coming around. As we get closer to actually having the work completed, those 2 week look aheads with the contractors, when they come in, I'll be forwarding those to staff so that they can help get the word out. That we will have contractors in the area. Our crews are also working on our primary and secondary mowing. The second of the primary cuts is ongoing now. That's a cut we usually try to have completed by the 4th of July holiday. Our secondary mowing, which is done by state forces, that is ongoing. We're probably about 25 to 35% complete with that in Fluvanna County right now. And then also wanted to touch base a little bit. I know there was some discussion last board meeting about the traffic study on South Boston Road and just looking at items we from that study. So I know, Mr. Fairchild, you and I had spoke about, you know, if there was anything widening or any additional capacity. So in that study, we're just constrained by right-of-way. There's not enough right-of-way to do wholesale widening on South Boston Road. Also, as part of that, they did look at Riverside Gate and the entrance there. Kind of dovetailing off of that, Mr. Dahl and I have spoken a few times here in the last few weeks. And again, thank you, Mr. Dahl, for reaching out to Lake Monticello's HOA. So we are going to do a series of studies. We've gotten permission from the HOA to put our traffic counters inside the gate so we can track the ingress and egress coming out of the Riverside Gate. Additionally, we've set a work order up with our consultants. We're going to do drone flyovers in the fall once school is back in, so we kind of get up, you know, not only the influx of people driving, but also school traffic, school buses, where people are going. And with that, start to try to develop a solution that could fit that particular intersection with the right-of-way constraints we now know because of the study. So this is very much an ongoing process to try and alleviate that. We're also, it's not just constrained to Riverside Gate, we're also looking at the other gates at Lake Monticello and just seeing what we can do about any of the congestion. Most of the traffic is going northwest, but the roads are not at capacity. So there's still quite a bit more traffic that we need to be on that road for them to be considered at capacity, according to the federal highway standard. We're not there yet.
Can I comment?
Yes.
I live on the Riverside Gate and I pass it every day, pretty much. Just this week alone, and just today alone, when I was exiting the gate, I was within, I would say, 50 feet of a car trying to turn, and that is after having looked both ways. And I recognized that the car was able to slow down and I was able to speed up. But earlier in the week, I had a car that I literally had to hit full acceleration to avoid the car hitting me. I would encourage you to not just put traffic monitor there, but actually a camera, because I think the monitor understates the real problem there. And I think the same issues exist with Monash. I'm not trying to diminish any other gates, but I know that this is a very serious problem. I've advocated for it for many years and, you know, done some efforts to try to look at it before, but it's only going to get worse. And you know, one of my neighbors will get killed there. So please do everything you can.
Yes, sir. And the drone footage is actually, that's the camera you're talking about. So that's going to also give us a view of not only the counts that we're going to get from the traffic counters, but additionally seeing those turn movements and being able to note the near misses and the distances and things like that with those flyovers, because those flyovers are done over the course of a several day period, looking at different hours throughout the day, trying to capture the peak ingress and egress of those gates.
You don't even need flyovers, just point a camera right there at the intersection and you'll see it. You'll see it probably 10 times a day. It's that bad.
Does VDOT have the capability to just put a stationary camera pointed at the intersection if Lake Monticello would allow it?
We do have the capability, the preferred method, because again, this shows us a wholesale picture of what's going on. So yes, we could do that, but then I think it diminishes the other solutions, because you do have the entrance on the other side, and then you've got the traffic coming up and down.
Yeah, and I'm not talking to augment or change what VDOT's planning. I was just thinking as a one additional added resource of I know you and I talked in the camera, the drone flyover would be for 2 days, but maybe if you had a camera sitting there for 1 week, one whole work week cycle to really see what the you know, near misses are for a longer period of time.
I can just talk to our traffic engineer and see if that's...
I would really appreciate that because it is very dangerous.
Mr. Thornton, you said that you all were doing patching. First time I've ever seen VDOT do asphalt and gravel between the road and the ditch. And what's the purpose? Because I see, you know, it still kind of wears. I mean, that's on Paulette's school road. Mm. They did. Is that what you call patching?
So those are
potholes
on the shoulder of the road.
Yeah, on the shoulder of the road, and they were putting it was asphalt and gravel. But I go by there. I don't know how long that's gonna last.
So that doesn't last. So that's actually there. It's called a safety wedge.
Okay.
And they put that there for a recovery zone for errant vehicles that run off because you've got a elevation differential from the surface of the pavement to the actual shoulder. So they put that wedge in with gravel and asphalt, and that allows safe recovery. Okay. So should someone roll off or drive off the road, they can recover safely.
Okay, thank you. Yes, any other questions from Mr. Thornton?
No, I just want to commend them on always being very responsive, even an item this week that a citizen asked me about, and it wasn't even, ended up being really not even a VDOT item, but by the end of the day, got a response that helped me then come to the county, and so thank you for always having good customer service.
And I submitted the one thing.
Well, I was going to say, are you done, Mr. Thornton?
I did hit just one other thing I wanted to add, and I will touch on the Bobby's Church. So that has been assigned to our roadside crews, so they're going to go out and look at the tree trimming on that.
What was it?
Limb encroachments within the roadway.
It's on the roadway from a driveway where they have school bus stop. Mm-hmm. The trees have gotten so close to the road that you can't, it cuts down the vision. Mm-hmm. Or line of sight coming around the curve, so thank you.
Yes. And then just one other thing, if I may. So this coming fiscal year, starting July 1, there is a added, we have our regular maintenance budget that we get in Culpeper District and then across the state. The state has seen fit to add additional monies to our maintenance budget, so that's a good thing for us, my job security. And for my staff. So with that, though, means I'm going to have additional contractors in the area doing maintenance work. This will, because of with the additional money came additional strings I have, targets I have to hit. So there may be additional crews, probably more than what anyone has seen in Flea Bandit. So I just want to put that out. We have Curtis Contracting. We also have a company out of Hampton Roads called Ditch Maintenance Incorporated. They run a truck-mounted rotary ditcher. They will be in. We had a kickoff meeting with them last week. And then, of course, SL Williamson does a lot of our patching. So a lot of those expanded maintenance metrics include ditching, shoulders, roadside, pipe replacements. It's going to be a lot across the Culpeper District. So not just in Flea Bandit, if you're driving in Louisa, Alomar, it's going to be a lot of contractors on the road performing regular maintenance work, in addition to our own state force crews, to really try to get, and I know Ms. Sheridan, you and I have talked about this with the ditching and the roadside needs that we have, so hopefully we can, you know, get some of those things down that you all want, and I just wanted to let y'all know, so if you get calls from your constituents, why we have people out there.
Mr. Thornton, I have a question for you.
Yes,
at our last meeting, we talked about a speed study on Route 53.
Yes, ma'am.
And I wanted to know what the how that was coming along.
So that has been assigned to our traffic engineering division. The length of time on studies for them to, once they receive it, to actually have the consultant do the work, have the analysis and the evaluation, you're looking at about 3 months.
Okay.
So I should have something for you by the next quarterly.
Okay, so, but you,
But it's been moved forward.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And ditto with you guys, because it's been a pleasure to deal with you, or all of VDOT, because when we call and we have a complaint, you are very reactive, because it's been several times where I've brought up intersection, and I'll go back and there'll be 50 feet of trees gone, or they've cut the bank down. Unfortunately, it's usually after something bad happens. Two things.
Very good.
About the 9,000, near Three Chop Road and Venable Road, Venable's got a really bad spot where there's been a lot of logging trucks on it. One of those 20-foot long potholes. And y'all may have fixed it. I haven't been down there lately. Just one of those things, just to put on your radar.
It's on our schedule.
Yep.
For them to come in.
All right, and the second thing. We were talking about the gates, and I hate to bring this back up, but you're talking about the school buses, and you know I drove one of them. Crofton section is outside of Lake Monticello. It does not have a gate into the lake. But when you come out of that section, and Mr. Tall's brother lives in there, I picked his niece up in there. When you come out of that section, you look to your left, and there is a security fence, which is on private property, but there are two 16 to 18-inch trees. So you got to look between a security fence, between two trees. I don't know if that's y'all's issue or Lake Monticello. If those two trees were gone, it would be a lot safer. And I just would ask that y'all, if you can, talk to them about possibly looking at that gate just to get line of sight back. Because I'm scared to death every time I pull the bus out there.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, anything else from me? Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Mm-hmm.
All right, the consent agenda is long.
Yes, it is.
Oh, all right. Minutes May 17, 2023. SHI's accounts payable report from April 2023. J, fiscal year 23 Circuit Court Technology Trust Fund Supplementary Appropriation. And K, fiscal year 21 Facilities Department Insurance Claim. L, fiscal year 21 Facilities Department Insurance Claim. M, fiscal year 23-5725 James Madison Highway Insurance Claim. N, fiscal year 23-11206 West River Road Insurance Claim. And O, fiscal year 23-14567 James Madison insurance claim. P, fiscal year 23 Sheriff Department insurance claim. Q, fiscal year 23 Sheriff Department insurance claim. R, fiscal year 23 Treasurer's Office supplementary appropriation. S, 2023 ambulance purchase agreement. T, R, K, Chevrolet vehicle purchase agreement. U, stretcher contract. D, vision government solution contract. W, park maintenance worker full-time job description. X, Y, Z, smart business development and tourist specialist proportional description. A, assistant county administrator position description upgrade. B, approval of fiscal year 24 CSA provider agreement. C, CRMF Central Elementary sewer pipe replacement. And D, CRMF Levant County Middle School HVAC repair. Anyone would like to pull anything from the consent agenda for further explanation?
I'll first say, man, it's been a month for insurance claims.
Yes.
Well, and some of it too, it's just trying to get caught up. You know, we're getting to the end of the fiscal year, so Miss Melton is on the surge right now. Yeah, the ones that say fiscal year 21, those are actually fiscal year 23.
Okay. All right.
I had a question about. In the case of O, I just was curious which location that happened.
What is it? Which one? Mr.
14567 James Madison Highway.
Oh, the James Madison. Okay.
Oh, the fire department?
Oh, I'm
fire
sorry. I missed that address up there.
Oh. Yeah.
So that was Palmyra?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes.
All right. Hey, I got one question.
Which one are you pulling?
I'm not pulling anything. With personal property taxes, is that just where we're refunding personal property taxes?
Which one are you talking about?
It's lines 27 through 43.
Oh, you're talking about the AP report. Okay, hold on there.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is my salute to Mr. Weaver. I really do.
What line did you say?
26 personal property taxes. My guess is that's probably somebody.
Yeah, someone made an overpayment or it's a rebate or something like that. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. All right, any other questions?
I meant to call Bunky before here and forgot about saying it. C, does anybody know what the sewer pipe replacement?
Yeah, that was at Central Elementary School. The school.
Yeah, after school?
Yeah, the school had closed down one day because they had a.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah,
they
had to close the school.
Yes, that was for the major.
Mm-hmm. But Mr. Popowitz, go ahead.
Yeah. We actually had some of our guys out there to
come to the mic so that we can pick you up on the recording.
Yeah, I had a couple of my guys go out there and help with the tools on that, and that thing's in pretty bad shape. It's, if I remember right, I think it's old clay pipe in there, mm-hmm. and something it does need to be replaced. I mean, it's in dire need.
But something happened?
Yeah, it collapsed.
And it
caused a backup in the school. Mm-hmm. And like I said, we got our guys out there to help the best we could, Travis and his team. So, mm-hmm. but yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
As we've learned over the past year, yes.
All right. Do we have any unfinished business?
Well, someone needs to make a motion on the consent.
Yes. All right. We have a second.
Second.
All right. We have a motion from Mr. Sheridan and a second by Mr. Fairchild on the consent list agenda. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Now the unfinished business. Anything?
I don't know if this would go under unfinished or new.
Go ahead.
I said something to you earlier this week about it. I'm just going to bring it up as a topic for conversation because all the constitutional officers are up for election this year. About the paragraph or the wording that we put in that and this can be for later because this is coming up brand new to everybody. Maybe we get it on the agenda somehow. I'm trying to get there. We made a decision about, I don't know how many years ago, 3 or 4 years ago.
I think it was 2017 or 18.
Okay, and we said that when constitutional officers were elected, if they were a new constitutional officer, we had the authority as a board to drop them to the minimum. And I just think that's up for a conversation since this is an election year for constitutional officers, in case we have a new one.
So what the board adopted, it was a constitutional officer pay policy in 2018 because back when constitutional officers, this was about 8 years ago, I think, there was a discussion of should a new constitutional officer that is coming in to that office get the same pay as the person that was in that office existing. And so I think there could be some different trains of thought on that, but what the board approved back in 2017 or 2018, they approved a constitutional officer pay policy that says something to the effect of when a constitutional officer gets elected to an office, kind of the baseline for that pay is what is paid by the compensation board. And then the Board of Supervisors has the authority to provide increases above and beyond that for the pay for that constitutional officer if they are elected to that office.
And we did that.
And that's what the board approved.
We adopted that. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And
I'd just like to discuss it because mm-hmm. we got new board members now.
Mm-hmm. Discuss right. it as in just know what the policy is?
Yeah.
Correct. Okay. According to the policy. I mean, there's two trains of thought. That is correct, or the salary is that set for the position, not the person that's in that position.
Like I said,
I'm not looking to get into a big discussion about it tonight. We can get it on an agenda somewhere down the road, but since we have all the constitutional officers up for re-election this year, in case that happens, we have somebody new. I sure would like that person that's running to have an idea of what their salary is going to be and not be guessing.
So But what you're wanting,
I argued this back then. I thought it was the position, not the person. And I'll use you for an example, Mr. Fairchild. You took the place of somebody that's been sitting there for 36 years. Now, granted, it's a much less salary, but you didn't get a 36% pay cut because you're brand new. I think that's the position. To me, and that's what I argued before, I thought the position was what got the pay, not the, because it's an elected position. Albeit like the delegates, the supervisors, the senators, whomever.
Yeah, I struggle with this. I understand your point, Mr. Sheridan, but I struggle with it because, you know, it is one thing to look at, say, for example, the Commissioner of Revenue has been serving, you know, very well for 15, 16, 17 years, I don't know, however long, but and has been, you know, subject to raises and had increases accordingly. But there's no guarantee that the next person that is elected would have his experience or ability. And so I don't know why we would automatically assume to give that person the same salary that he currently has or that she has. I think that it's an opportunity for the board to reassess where that salary stands. And I mean, we just had a discussion about board compensation, and that discussion basically ended with us not voting for increasing in board compensation, even though part of the rationale was to say that, you know, if you want to attract people to run for the board, that you need to have an attractive salary. I would argue that that is no different for anybody who's running to be Commissioner of Revenue, to be the Registrar, to be any of those positions. And so I think that, you know, when somebody chooses to run for that position, they're not doing it for a salary level. They're doing it for their love of the county and for their ability to lead the county in a particular direction. So I don't think that we should automatically assume that they get compensated at the highest level possible.
Like I said, I'm not trying to make this a big debate tonight. I just would like to put it on the thing to look at it, give people a chance to digest it, because I think there's a whole lot of factors that go into it, and we don't need to be here until 10 o'clock tonight discussing this.
Is there anything that you want the administration to bring back to us for a discussion later?
That was my question, what you're looking for.
I'm looking for us to have a discussion. I don't think it's anything really they can bring back to us. It's either stay with this policy or we look at it as a position. But I mean, you can give us what other day. I'm not trying to put more work on you guys.
No, I mean, I have a monthly meeting with the constitutional officers. Well, I've heard a few things.
You can look at other counties and see if they adjust it backwards.
Yeah.
But like I said, we know we're not near the top.
All right. When do you want to have this on the agenda again?
It doesn't matter to me. Whenever a light agenda.
So does the board
before November?
Okay, well,
I'd like to have it before the election.
Yeah, definitely.
Just because that's, you know, that can possibly happen, and we'll make sure people understand.
Do you want me to bring this topic up for a presentation in August for what is kind of what is the policy as it stands now?
If that's a possibility. Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay, everyone agree?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Now, do we have any new business? If not, then I will open the second public comment. Anyone would like to speak to the board, please come to the podium, give your name and address, and address the board. Anyone? I don't see anyone coming, so I will close the second public comment.
I'm going to try to do you proud, Mr. O'Brien. I'm going to try to do you proud.
Mr. Sheridan is going to...
I certainly appreciate that.
Yes.
Madam Chair, I move the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A.1, Personnel Matters, Discussion, Consideration, or Interviews of Personnel Prospective Candidates. I don't have to read that whole thing.
No, just the three.
Okay. Oh, just the first part.
Yeah.
Okay. Section 2.2-3711A.5, prospective industry. X, Section 2.2-3711A.8. 4, of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purpose of discussing personnel, emergency services department, organizational change, prospective industry, prospective business update, legal matters. First, contract users' credit under the water and sewer ordinance. 2, temporary signs on county property. I'm sorry. Temporary. That's it. I'm done.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Second.
All right. We have a motion by Ms. Sherrod and a second by Ms. Eager. All in favor? Anyone opposed?
Aye.
Tony?
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I move the closed meeting be adjourned and approve that.
Sorry.
It's called mute.
Mute.
Yeah, I'm just glad I'm not there.
Go ahead.
I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Flew Valley County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be it resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify that to the best of each member's knowledge, one, and only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711-A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened or heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
All right, have a second. All right, motion by Ms. Turner, second by Mrs. Eager. All right, Tony?
I would just like to comment that Mr. Sheridan has done an excellent job.
Okay,
all right.
Thank you. Your vote. Tony?
Aye.
Need your vote. Individual vote.
No, we got to call him out, Ms. Eager. Ms. Eager.
Tony, get his. I need to get
his. Yes.
Ms. Eager.
Aye.
Okay.
Aye.
Christopher, Chair. Tony,
did I hear? He's already eyed.
Chair votes
aye.
We need to extend the meeting.
But extend, what time is it?
It's
9:21.
Till 9:25.
Okay. Have a second.
Second.
All right, we'll extend the meeting to 9:25. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Meeting is extended.
Motion to adjourn.
Second. All right.
Aye.
Okay. Ms. Sherrod did the motion. Ms. Eager did second to adjourn. And we are adjourned.